Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, July 13th, 2015. And with me today, I have the always brilliant John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I'm very good. Nice to be here.
It's awesome to have you here on this sunny and already hot Monday morning.
Well, let me check my Apple Watch. Shows me the outdoor temperature, 73. Nice. I like that. But it's going to get hotter.
That shows you the difference between where you are and where I am in the TMO towers, because it's already 78 and still on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I'm sure our listeners aren't that enthralled with how hot it is for me. So instead, how about if we talk a little bit about Comcast and their new plans?
Let's do it.
All right. So Comcast announced, today's Monday. So they released the announcement at some point yesterday on Sunday that they are introducing a new streaming television service called Stream. And it sounds interesting, okay? So you get to have several channels, including HBO, and then you can watch content on your iPad, your iPhone, your Mac. So you can watch on devices other than your television. And it includes a cloud-based DVR option, and it includes access to TV Anywhere, which is the term that's used to describe the apps for watching content when you have a cable television subscription. So, like, you want to watch television shows from Fox, so you get your Fox subscription, or you put your info into the Fox app on your Apple TV, and then you can watch all their shows. That sort of thing. All right, so now here are the restrictions. Doesn't work on your television.
Bad.
And doesn't work when you leave your home network.
Very bad.
So, yeah, it's an interesting idea, because Comcast is getting that there are other ways that people want to watch content. So they're trying to address that. That's a good thing. What I think they're not getting, or maybe this is by design, they're not giving you the option to view your content places other than, say, your living room.
You know, I wonder about the design process that goes into this. I always feel like we get these new services and then we explore them and we write about them, and if we find that there's some appalling gotcha. And I don't think it's necessarily always a failure of design or understanding the market. I think it's often rights restrictions or concerns about competing with themselves. I think the engineers come up with great ideas and they can do anything that they want to do, but then they go to the attorneys and they find out what their contracts look like and what their licensing issues are like. And then they sit around the table and they go, well, this is what we can do. And the vice president says, fine, let's do it. I'm sure a lot of people will just love it. And then you get the Abilene paradox and everybody else in the room says, yeah, yeah, Mr. Vice President, we agree. And then they go ahead and they all march forward. And it comes out, and some people like it and use it and write about it, and then other people go, this could have been a little better. And it seems to be a rinse-repeat cycle for all of these new services.
I totally see that. And when I look at this, what I see is Comcast not getting how cord cutters watch television and want to watch television. It's not about taking away the big screen, meaning the television itself. It's about how, when, and where we're watching the content that we want to see. So a service that is less restrictive is going to be more appealing to someone like me as a cord cutter. Sling is a perfect example. Sling gives you a limited set of channels, but you can watch the content from those channels anywhere you are. You're not limited to your own network. So you can watch Sling on your television. You can watch Sling on your iPad. You can watch it in your living room. You can watch it at the airport. It doesn't matter where you are. As long as you have an internet connection, you can watch your content.
I believe you can do this also with the DirecTV app. I'll have to check on this. The other night I was on the recliner watching a TV show from my DirecTV DVR that had been saved and previously recorded. And I was able to sit with my iPad in the recliner and pull that show off of my DVR and onto my iPad through Wi-Fi. The only thing that was missing was the DVR controls. I couldn't skip over the commercials in that mode, which was a bit annoying. But I think I recall that you can do that anywhere with DirecTV, with selected content.
Okay, and so that's cool because people don't want to be limited to their couch. All right, here's where I see Stream as a potentially valuable add-on service, not a replacement service, but an add-on service. Let's say that that you and your significant other are watching something on your big screen TV, and you have other people in your house. For this scenario, we'll say there's kids, and they want to watch different shows. So instead of having televisions in their rooms, they have their iPads.
There you go.
So they go to their rooms to watch the shows they want on their iPads while you're watching whatever it is that you want to watch on the big screen TV in the living room.
Right. But unfortunately, it's just a subset, a handful of channels right now, NBC, Fox, and HBO if you have a subscription.
Right. And there'll be other services as well, or channels as well. Those are just the ones that I happen to mention.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's not going to sit right with a lot of kids.
Yeah, we'll see what channels they do include, and that'll have a big bearing on just how much people like this. But my feeling is that Comcast is missing the boat, because what they really want to do is go after cord cutters, people like me, and what they have presented is not something that I find compelling.
I think what they do is they look at the trends. They probably have a spreadsheet and some graphing software, and they look at where their revenue is coming from. And I think they realize that the handwriting is on the wall when it comes to cord cutters. But companies like Comcast and AT&T and Time Warner, they're also ISPs, and so they also double dip on the other side. So I think what happens is that they're going to gradually switch over. They put their toes in the water a little bit, and they say, well, this is what we can do now, and it won't affect our revenue stream. And then we'll be in a position to leverage off of that as time goes on, as cord cutting gets really drastic and we need to renew our energies into these other technologies that we've dabbled in, and now we'll put them in full force. And so the whole idea is to make sure the revenue stream, when you add the two together, stays constant or continues to go up. And that's why we're seeing this dabbling here at the beginning.
And this is definitely a dabbling, because it's going to start soon in Boston only as a beta. And then they're planning on expanding that out to Seattle and Chicago, I believe, before the end of the year. And then depending on how well that rollout, that very limited rollout goes, then they will roll this out to all their markets sometime in early 2016.
Well, my hat's off to them for that, because this business of waterfall rollouts where you do everybody at once is always a disaster and puts too much of a load on the system. So trying it out in a few cities is a very smart thing to do to get the kinks out of it.
Sure. And they may find through this beta program that some of the restrictions that they have may not be appropriate for what they really want the service to be. So we could see changes before this becomes a nationwide program.
Well, that would be nice.
That would be nice. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. All right. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about today, John, is a piece that, it's from your particle debris from Friday.
Right.
And you talked about the not-so-obvious design features that are missing from Apple Watch. What's up with that?
Well, I must give due credit, first of all, to Ben Bajarin at Creative Strategies. How particle debris works is that I have a folder where I collect all the interesting sort of technical news debris during the week that didn't make the TMO headlines and things that I think might interest Apple-oriented customers. And then on Friday, I go through that folder and I start commenting on each one of those news articles. And there's usually one that sticks out, is notable, and that I want to comment on more deeply. And this was Ben Bajarin's article, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, called My Week Without an Apple Watch, where he used some quantitative metrics. He installed an app on his phone that told him how many times a day he picked it up and used it. And that got me thinking about, you know, the duty cycle of information experiences. And what I'm trying to say is that you've got a phone, an information experience happens, some message or some email or some text message, something happens, and then you have to pick up your phone, and you may have to, you know, touch ID onto it, and then go to the right app, look at the badge, and figure out, or look at the home screen if you've got it set up that way, and kind of deal with this information experience. And depending on how you have your phone set up and how your technical work and lifestyle goes, that can be rather annoying, especially if you're a certain kind of, you know, technical worker or a manager or is focused in an office on doing something specific. You've got a code to write, or you've got some, you know, charts to develop, or you've got some research to do. And then, depending on that, you may be very focused, and it's hard to deal with all these information experiences that come in on your phone. So, and of course, sometimes digging it out is a problem. I remember I was in a medical center a while back, and my iPhone was in my carry bag. It was across the room. It was in a zippered compartment. I would have had to dash across the room. I wasn't in a position to do that. Dig it out, get onto it, and answer the phone. Instead, I just answered the phone call on my wrist. It was my wife wondering where I was and how long I was going to be. And I just chatted with her for a second and said, I'll be right out. So I started thinking about how the watch can elegantly and properly partition the work if you've got it set up right, so that these information experiences can get under better control. There are some things that can be deferred, and there's some things that you want to attend to right away, like a phone call from your wife. So I started exploring that, and you know, I haven't seen too many articles that went into much detail on that. Ben's conclusion after his week without it was that it certainly is a convenience, and it helps deal with the flow of information in his life. But the bottom line was, quote, I can no longer imagine life without it. And I think that's true for me, too. Before I had the Apple Watch, I was kind of a slave to my phone, and it would often get left in another room. I'd be somewhere else in the area, and I wouldn't hear it ring, or I'd miss an important text message. That doesn't happen to me anymore. So having this thing on your wrist is a very useful way to partition the information. I don't know how many of you out there have ever had an experience where you've been in the mall and maybe got separated from your wife and her phone is buried in her purse, and you try to call her so you can rendezvous at Macy's, and of course she doesn't hear the phone ring because it's very noisy, and you'd love to have an Apple Watch on her wrist so that when you called her, you know, you'd never miss a phone call. I know we're going to do that in this family. And my wife, for the first time, said, oh, that's a great idea. And she started actually shopping for an Apple Watch last time we were in the store. So,
wow.
That turned her around, that one feature of the watch, being able to not miss an important call. Because you'd think with an iPhone in your purse, you'd never miss a call. Doesn't happen. Maybe it was on mute mode. Maybe the ringer was down too low. Maybe you're in a noisy area. Maybe the sound is muffled because it's buried in pockets in the purse and you just can't hear it. So I think that one of the things that Apple needs to tout more is this elegant partitioning of information experiences. And once you start experiencing that, then you realize you really don't want to live without an Apple Watch anymore. The we used to talk about how it would be nice to have the Apple Watch be independent of the phone, but Apple engineers figured out that no, what you want is a partner device that deals with these information experiences on the phone in a proper kind of way. And I can see how that would be very effective in an executive environment where you need to glance at something that's urgent, but pulling a phone out of your pocket is socially awkward.
You know, the thing about that, that really strikes me is that Apple did exactly what they have done so many times in the past. Instead of giving us what we think we want, they're giving us what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And what we thought we wanted was a completely independent device on our wrist. And I was in that camp. And
then
I started using Apple Watch, and I'm like, oh.
Now I get it.
Now I get it. And then it was a very natural progression for me to start deciding what notifications go to the watch and what notifications stay on the phone so that I would have a better idea without ever looking at a device how important a message is.
This is why I advise Apple Watch customers to spend some time with the Apple Watch app on their iPhone and munch through the settings and look at how you expect the watch to perform and react, and make sure you have those settings tuned just the way you want so that you have the proper kinds and quantities of information experiences being diverted over to your watch. And if you do that in a way that suits you, you'll find that the watch becomes indispensable.
Yes, and if you have everything going to the watch, then it's just this overwhelming thing stuck in your wrist.
Right, and then you run down the battery too.
There's that too. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm curious to see if Apple, and this kind of ties back to our discussions from last week, if Apple is going to change the marketing message when iOS 9 comes out and start presenting Apple Watch more in the light that you're representing, John.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so, because I think it's clear that that's consciously how Apple engineers define the relationship between the watch and the phone. It's just that not many people notice that if they're not doing it the right way or if they haven't used a watch, Apple Watch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, we're about out of time.
As it goes that way.
Yes. So we're going to have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
And it's always a pleasure to get your perspective because you have wonderful insight into the world of Apple. So thank you.
Shucks.
And listeners, thank you for being here too. It's always great to have you along for the ride. Head over to the iTunes store, please, and rate the show because I love getting the feedback and it makes it so much easier for other people to find the show and then join in with us every day too. So listeners, thank you for being here and we'll see everyone again tomorrow.